The year is 1983. The Ramones have a new album coming out, Subterranean Jungle. They just fired their drummer Marky for having a drinking problem. They needed a new drummer, and then they would be back at it. My name is Harley Isaac Rother. I'm a musician, rock and roller, and now podcaster. Welcome to Guitars and Stolen Cars, Season 1, The Ramones, Episode 8. Too Tough to Die.
Rock and Roll History Podcast. Renegade Rock and Roll Podcast. Rock and Roll History Podcast. History. Rock and Roll History Podcast. Podcast.
Marky was out, and it was time to look for a new drummer, so the Ramones held auditions. Richard Reinhardt was a drummer playing in bands around New York. He hung out with some of the Ramones roadies, and they got him an audition. Richard wasn't a punk music fan, and he didn't even own a single Ramones album. But the band liked him at the audition. He was professional, didn't have any drug or drinking problems, and he could sing harmony and write songs. Plus, he was already friends with the crew. Good enough. Richard Reinhardt became Richie Ramone. Richie said, "It was difficult working myself up to the speed. There are three speeds in the Ramones. Fast, pretty fast, and very fast." The new Ramones album, their seventh, Subterranean Jungle, came out February of 1983. It was produced by Richie Cordell, who had recently done a number one hit song with Joan Jett, I Love Rock and Roll. But not even he could help the Ramones' lackluster album sales. It went to number 83, and the singles failed to even chart. Oh well. It may have had too many covers, as Marky complained about in the last episode, but it also had some classic Ramones songs, like Outsider, written by Dee Dee, and Psychotherapy, written by Dee Dee and Johnny. These songs have everything that made the Ramones great. Psychotherapy is a Ramones classic. Literally psychotic lyrics, powerful guitars, fast drumming, great hooks. Outsider is also classic Ramones, celebrating being an outsider, outside of everything. The album has three covers: Little Bit of Soul, which had been a hit for the Music Explosion in 1967, Time Has Come Today by the Chambers Brothers, which had also been a hit in 1967, and a song called I Need Your Love, which was written by a guy named Bobby D. Waxman, but was never a hit. Waxman played in some minor CBGB's bands in the 70s, and recorded an unreleased demo of I Need Your Love. It's a little unclear how the Ramones came upon the song, other than knowing it from the CBGB's days. Here is Bobby D. Waxman's group, The Boyfriends, doing I Need Your Love. Now here is the Ramones doing I Need Your Love. I also want to point out that if you remember back to the last episode, Markey was strongly objecting to the drum sounds on this album. For better or for worse, the super 80s drum sound is very prevalent on this track. A Little Bit of Soul is the album's opener. Here's the hit version from 1967. Now when you're feeling low and the fish won't bite, you need a little bit of soul to put you right. You gotta think like you wanna kneel and pray, and then a little bit of soul will come your way. Now here's the Ramones. Now when you're feeling low and the fish won't bite, you need a little soul to put you back. You gotta make like you wanna be your friend, and then a little soul will come your way. Time Has Come Today was done by the Chambers Brothers. In addition to being a hit, it's notable for being the first use of the word psychedelic in a song. Willie Chambers sings, "My soul has been psychedelicized." Here's the Chambers Brothers in 1967. Here's the Ramones in 1983. These covers are all decent, but may come off like filler when put against top-shelf Ramones tunes like Outsider and Psychotherapy, which were on the same album. With the new album Subterranean Jungle out, it was time to hit the road with the new drummer Richie. The Ramones tour machine ground on. The East Coast, the South, the West Coast, the Midwest, Canada, back through the Midwest, the South again, the East Coast again. Close to 100 shows that year. Not bad. Amy Carter, the daughter of President Jimmy Carter, came to a show in Georgia. She was a Ramones fan. Meanwhile, Johnny had secretly moved in with Joey's ex, Linda. But he didn't want Joey to find out, as he knew it would only further fan the flames. So Johnny kept his old apartment with his own ex-girlfriend Roxy and got a new apartment with Linda. He would always have the band pick him up and drop him off at his old place, hoping no one would find out about him and Linda living together. After a local show in Queens, Johnny got dropped off at his old apartment like usual. It was around 3 in the morning, and Johnny's ex, Roxy, was hanging out in front of the apartment drinking with a random punk rock guy. Johnny didn't like that one bit. He ordered Roxy to get inside and told the guy to get lost. Johnny was used to intimidating people. He was a 6'1", all-American, former construction worker, current punk rock guitar hero with a leather jacket. But punk had changed. The punk rockers of 1983 were no longer just arty weirdos who could be pushed around. Punk had turned into hardcore and was more street. The law of the street says, never let someone push you around. So when Johnny walked up to the punk rock kid and told him to get lost, the kid hit Johnny in the face. Johnny went down, and the kid kicked him in the head with a steel-toe boot. Johnny woke up in the hospital and had to get brain surgery for a fractured skull. He had made the cover of the New York Post, quote, punk rock superstar Johnny Ramone and his blonde lover Cynthia Whitney, aka Roxy. He's fighting for his life in a Greenwich Village hospital after being stomped by another rocker during a jealous fury, read the New York Post. The Times and other leading newspapers also covered the incident. Great, finally getting some publicity. He was out of commission for 3 months in recovery. But by December of 83, the Ramones were playing shows again. Johnny gave up the charade of hiding that he was living with Linda. The Ramones spent the first half of 1984 playing shows on the East Coast and writing a new album. The album would be called Too Tough to Die. Maybe because Johnny was out of the hospital and he was too tough to die. Or maybe because the Ramones were too tough to die. They had been a band for 8 years. They were on their third drummer and eighth album. Most of their peers had fallen by the wayside or gone pop, but the Ramones were too tough to die. They were done with hotshot producers, and they brought back the old team. Tommy Erdele, aka Tommy Ramone producing, and Ed Stasium engineering. The album was good. The Ramones incorporated two new styles into their sound. Hardcore, the subgenre of punk that was faster and, well, more hardcore than the original punk sound. And, in the complete opposite direction, 80s dance pop. The Ramones could nail both styles. Check out the hardcore song Warthog. Dee Dee sings the verses and Joey comes in for the chorus. On the dance pop side is Howling at the Moon, a song Dee Dee wrote about marijuana. They brought in some guests for this one. Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics co-produced the song with Tommy, and Ben Tench from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers plays keyboard.
No more narco, no more dance to
the song has pop hit written all over it, but the music industry was in the habit of ignoring the Ramones, and this would be no exception. The album came out in October with no hit, and the Ramones went back on tour. The East Coast, the South, the West Coast, the Midwest. In the West, they did 3 shows with Black Flag. Black Flag were the Ramones of hardcore. They arguably created the genre, persevered against the odds, and toured relentlessly. In fact, members of Black Flag saw the Ramones in the 1970s and were inspired to see that the Ramones drove to the show in a van, not a tour bus. If the Ramones could do it, so could they. And they did. But Black Flag was hated by the LAPD. The LAPD would take any and every opportunity to harass Black Flag and their fans. The show at the Hollywood Palladium with the Ramones was no exception. The police swarmed the gathered crowd in riot gear. Dee Dee remembered, "That was a heavy night. There was a bad riot. They broke all the windows on Hollywood Boulevard. I saw policemen hitting girls with truncheons." I recently had the opportunity to meet Black Flag's guitar player, Greg Ginn, and I asked him what he remembered about opening for the Ramones at the Hollywood Palladium. "Broken glass" was all he said. While the Ramones were touring and recording Too Tough to Die, former Ramon drummer Marky was drinking. He tried to quit, but he got really bad delirium tremens, also known as the DTs or alcohol withdrawals. One time, when he stayed sober for a whole day, it got so bad that he hallucinated a dinosaur was chasing him around the neighborhood. He had to run home and hide under the blankets. Another time, while on a binge, he crashed a 1968 Cadillac Coupe de Ville into the front of a furniture store. It was 3 in the afternoon. He had to get sober. Not just because he wanted to, but now the court was ordering him to. He went to rehab and stayed sober for 7 weeks, but one thing led to another, and soon enough he was back at it. After he started a fist fight with his old friend Johnny Thunders for being in a bar bathroom when Marky was trying to use it, he knew it was time to get sober for real. He checked into a more intensive rehab center and came out clean. He never drank again. In 1985, the Ramones did more touring of America and Europe, including 2 shows in Europe opening for U2 and REM, 2 more bands the Ramones had influenced but were now massively eclipsing them. In May of 85, U.S. President Ronald Reagan took a visit to Bitburg Cemetery in Germany, where he laid a wreath. The problem with that is there were Nazis buried at the cemetery, and it looked like the President of the United States was mourning the death of Nazis. Joey and Dee Dee didn't like that one bit and wrote a song critical of Reagan called Bonzo Goes to Bitburg. Bonzo was the name of a monkey in a movie that President Reagan had starred in during his acting career. Their manager, Gary Kerfiss, teamed the Ramones up with Jean Beauvoir, I think I'm pronouncing that right, who had played in the punk band The Plasmatics. But now he was doing production work. Kerfiss had Beauvoir produce the single for Bonzo Goes to Bitburg. He did a great job. The B-side of the single is an obscure Ramones song called Go Home, Anne. It's notable only because it was mixed by Motorhead's Lemmy Kilmister. Anyway, everyone except for Johnny loved the job Jean Beauvoir did on Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, so they decided to put it on the next album and have Beauvoir produce the album. Animal Boy, the name of the resulting album, was recorded in December of 1985. It opens with Somebody Put Something in My Drink, which was written by new Ramones drummer Richie. It's a good song, but the real standout of the album is definitely Bonzo Goes to Bitburg. Johnny, a staunch conservative, didn't like them taking a shot at President Reagan, so he made them change the song title on the album to My Brain is Hanging Upside Down. It's a return to the dance pop style they had nailed on the last album with Howlin' at the Moon. The most pointed lyrics in the song are, "You're a politician. Don't become one of Hitler's children." But the chorus is a sing-along of My Brain is Hanging Upside Down, presumably because they couldn't believe the president was honoring Nazis. You're a politician. Don't become one of Hitler's children. Bonzo Goes to also in 1985, little Steven Van Zandt, the guitar player in Bruce Springsteen's band, put together Artists Against Apartheid to protest the racist apartheid state in South Africa and raise money. Little Steven invited Joey Ramone to be a part of it. He was surprised how excited Joey was to be included in the project and how much Joey cared about the issue. In fact, Joey would go on to put together his own project called Joey Ramone and the Resistance to play rallies and fundraisers for progressive political causes. Joey Ramone was a mensch. The Ramones didn't do a lot in the first half of 1986. But when Animal Boy came out in May, they did their standard touring to promote it. The East Coast, England, the Midwest, the West Coast. 1987 started with shows in the tri-state area and the South. And for the first time, two shows in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and one in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Then back to the studio for a new album. Daniel Ray had played in a band called Shrapnel that had opened for the Ramones in the past. He was friends with the band and had been spending his time producing demos in his parents' basement. Johnny heard one of these demos and thought it sounded better than the last Ramones album, so Johnny brought him in to produce the next album. Daniel had never produced anything besides home demos. Thus, his rate was very cheap. Perfect for the Ramones. He had other benefits, too. He could get along with both Joey and Johnny, a rarity at this point, and he could co-write songs since he was a musician. The resulting album, Halfway to Sanity, is decent. One deep cut and highlight of the album is called Go Little Camaro Go, written by Dee Dee. It features guest vocals from the band's old friend, Debbie Harry from Blondie. The song captures everything that's great about rock and roll. Fast cars, catchy melodies, and the Ramones. It also pays tribute to the Trashmen / Rivington's Papa Ooh Mau Mau doo-wop style vocals. The main highlight of the album is another Dee Dee song that he co-wrote with producer Daniel Ray, a Ramones classic, I Wanna Live. It's somewhere between the dance pop style and the original Ramones style.
Oh, then my lover exposes me, and I know I'm just a damn fool.
With their new album, Halfway to Sanity, in the can, the Ramones were back on the road. But trouble was brewing, again. Richie Ramone, the drummer who had replaced Marky, had been in the band 4 years. He played on 3 albums, some of which contained songs he wrote. And he had played around 400 shows with the band. But he was still being paid like a hired gun. He wasn't making any money on the Ramones' biggest cash cow, t-shirts, and to add insult to injury, his name was on the t-shirts. Richie had been making a fuss about it, and Joey was sympathetic. But Johnny's attitude was, fine, we'll just take your name off the shirts. They're not buying it because it has your name on it. The truth is, Johnny was just a tough negotiator, and to Johnny, that's how you negotiate. He would have budged eventually, but that would never happen because in the middle of a string of shows, Richie heard a rumor that he was going to be fired after the tour ended. That wasn't true, but it was enough to be the last straw for Richie. After finishing a gig in Long Island, Richie called a limo and went out the back of the club, got in the limo, and was gone. They never heard from him again. But they had shows coming up. 12 shows had to be canceled. There was a whole season of touring already booked, and they did not want to have to cancel more shows. They called on their old friend Clem Burke, drummer of Blondie. There wasn't a lot of time to rehearse. They did 2 shows with Clem, who took on the name Elvis Ramone, but they did not go well. Clem, as a musician, is an artist. He said of his playing, "I don't necessarily believe in playing the same thing every time." But the Ramones didn't need an artist. They needed a machine. The Ramones felt like Clem was uneven and couldn't keep up with them. Johnny said, "He couldn't keep up. Not even close. I felt 2 feet tall when we played those shows." Clem, on the other hand, felt the opposite. Quote, "I was a better player than they had been used to, and I don't know if they could actually keep up with me." The truth is, Clem Burke and the Ramones just weren't a good fit musically. But the Ramones were in a pinch. They had more shows booked on the East Coast, the West Coast, and Europe. Monty Melnick, the ever-resourceful tour manager, knew exactly what to do. He called Markey. Markey had been fired because of his alcohol problem 4 years earlier, but now Markey was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he had been sober for several years. Monty got Markey an audition. The audition turned out to be just meeting up with Johnny. They played, and it clicked. Johnny told Markey, "It's like you never left." Markey was a Ramon again, and they were back on tour. But Markey noticed some changes since he had left in 1982. "When I came back, the fucking tension in the band was so thick you could cut it with a knife. Joey was drinking and doing coke. Joey and Johnny were definitely not talking. And I don't know what planet Dee Dee was on. He was on psycho drugs, smoking pot, wearing Adidas uniform, sneakers, and gold chains." Dee Dee was rapping in the tour van. He had recently been in and out of an institution, and inside, the other patients got Dee Dee into hip-hop, Run DMC and LL Cool J. As Dee Dee put it, "I went out and bought 10 Adidas jumpsuits and matching sneakers and wrote 10 raps." Markey observed, "He could rap and annoy Johnny at the same time." Dee Dee commented that rap and punk are both rebellious musics of the streets. Dee Dee recorded a laughably bad rap single called Funky Man. He also cut off his bowl-cut Ramones hair as a fuck you to Johnny. He was defying the Ramones uniform. Here's Funky Man. Right. Aside from the obvious changes in Dee Dee and the other Ramones, Markey also noticed some changes in the crowd since he left. Well, sort of. The crowds were bigger. And they were largely the same age. In other words, the Ramones got older, but their fans stayed the same age. A new generation of kids were coming to their shows. The Ramones spent 1988, the year that I was born, touring America and Europe. In December, they went back to the studio to record their 11th album, Brain Drain. They had a new producer, Bill Laswell, who had worked with everyone from jazz keyboardist Herbie Hancock to metal band Motorhead. Previous Ramones producers, Daniel Ray and John Beauvoir, also worked on the album. One highlight of Brain Drain is Joey's "I Don't Wanna Merry Christmas" tune. "Merry Christmas, I Don't Wanna Fight Tonight." The song is classic Ramones, 60s-style chord progression with Ramones guitars. It also fits in with the great American tradition of Jews writing Christmas classics, which goes at least as far back to the 1940s with Irving Berlin writing, "I'm dreaming of a white Christmas." Anyway, here's the Ramones.
Merry Christmas, I don't want to fight tonight. Merry Christmas, I don't want to fight tonight. Merry Christmas, I don't want to fight tonight with you. I'll wear a Santa and a sleigh and tell her why is it always this way. Where is Rudolph? Where is Blitzen, baby? Merry Christmas, Merry, Merry, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, I don't want to fight tonight is a great song. However, the standout track on the album is without a doubt Pet Sematary, a song Dee Dee wrote with Daniel Ray. Stephen King, still an avid Ramones fan, asked them to write a song for a movie that was being made based on his novel Pet Sematary. The story of Pet Sematary revolves around a cursed pet cemetery where any pet or anyone who gets buried there comes back to life as an evil version of themselves. Dee Dee asked for a summary of the plot and came back an hour later with the song. It's a new take on the Ramones' classic I Don't Wanna song format. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't wanna live my life again. Brilliant. Stylistically, it was in the 80s dance pop vein, complete with synthesizers and 80s drum sounds. But it still had the Ramones guitars, and it was a great song.
Itchy gobblers and wild lows come at the grand light making a sound. The smell of death is all around. And at night when the cold wind blows, no one cares, nobody knows. I don't want to be buried. I don't want to live my life again.
Even though he was still delivering great songs, Dee Dee Ramone was checking out. He didn't even want to play on the new album, so Daniel Ray did most of the bass tracking. When the Ramones went on tour to support the album, Dee Dee wasn't interested in performing. He just stood on stage, not moving at all, which was totally lame compared to his old stage antics of jumping, spinning, and rocking the fuck out. In between tours in 1989, Sire Records let Dee Dee cut a full-length hip-hop album. He took on the rap name Dee Dee King and brought in Daniel Ray to produce. Daniel Ray commented, "Next thing I know, we're in the studio doing this thing for real, to my horror." The Dee Dee King album, Standing in the Spotlight, is universally panned, but it actually has some good songs and is much better than the earlier single, Funky Man. My favorite is German Kid, where Dee Dee raps in English and German, and Blondie's Debbie Harry sings the hook.
The mic, 150 pounds of dynamite. The guy with the rhyme about the pyramid. Bet you didn't know I was a German kid. Und ich finde es gut, wenn Leute lacht. Ich hab die Energie, ich hab die Kraft. Ein hübsches Mädchen, gib mir einen Kuss. Ein Geld für den Taxi, nimm den Bus.
Not exactly changing the rap game, but an interesting footnote. The Ramones toured for the first half of 1989, and then Dee Dee quit. Management called a meeting to see what was up, and Dee Dee didn't even show. Johnny said, "If you were to ask Dee Dee why he quit every single day, you would get a different answer every time." But there may have been no single reason why Dee Dee quit. He had been in the band with Joey and Johnny for 15 years. That was a long time, especially given that they hadn't really gotten along with each other since 1977, and they toured constantly. Another reason may be that Dee Dee stopped taking his medication. He left his wife and moved out of the suburbs and into the Chelsea Hotel in the city. As Dee Dee put it, "When I left the Ramones in July of 89, I made a lot of changes in my life. I left my wife, I left my girlfriend, I left the band." Dee Dee Ramone, was no longer a Ramon. In the next episode, the Ramones find a new bass player and make it into the 90s, but all good things must come to an end. The band ends on a high note, sort of. See you in the next episode. Adios, amigos. Thank you for listening to Guitars and Stolen Cars. If you're listening to this as they come out, you know we're in the coronavirus shutdown. I'm happy to keep the show going during the pandemic, but I will ask a favor of you. Please text message a link to this show to a friend that you think will like it. As you can imagine, it took a bunch of work to put this together, and I did love doing it. But I knew that the main way people were going to find out about this was word of mouth. But since we're not going outside and being around other people right now, I need your help getting the word of mouth going. So please show me some love and text the link to this show to a friend right now. You can do it. Thank you very much for sending that link. If you have the means and would like, you can support the show financially on our Patreon for as little as $5 a month. That's like the price of a slice of pizza in San Francisco. That will help cover the expenses it took to make this and allow me to get the next season rolling as soon as possible. That can be found on guitarsandstolencars.com under the support tab. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show. You can go to guitarsandstolencars.com for show notes, more information. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/guitarsandstolencars. You can find me and say what's up on social media, on Instagram at Harley Isaac Rother, Twitter at Harley I Rother, and Facebook at facebook.com/guitarsandstolencars. All right, thank you so much. Rock on, stay safe. Or don't stay safe, whatever. Rock and roll history podcast.